Back now with Day to Day. Opening ceremonies for the Olympics are now just 3 days away. Most of the attention will be on Beijing, but six other cities in China will host events as well, including that country's most populous city, Shanghai.
Back in the 1930s, Shanghai was a hub of commerce between East and West. And over the years, the city's become this great blend of traditions and cultures. You can see it on the face of the city and its architecture. You can hear it in the jazz that came out of Shanghai decades ago. The Olympics have inspired a Chinese-American music producer to create an updated soundtrack for those visiting his native Shanghai.
My name is Dave Liang, and I'm the producer of the Shanghai Restoration Project, a musical project that combines traditional Chinese instruments with hip-hop and electronica.
Independent producer Martina Castro spoke with David Liang about writing the musical story of Shanghai.
Shanghai's a really interesting city. For those who haven't been there, what they probably wouldn't expect are all the Western colonial buildings that were built in the 1920s and 30s. They have an entire area right on the waterfront called the Bund, which has a bunch of old buildings that were used for trading and for banking back in the day. And what's really interesting is you walk just a few blocks to the west and you'll see traditional Chinese buildings. They have some of the oldest temples in China there. So it's really this beautiful fusion of Eastern and Western architecture and culture. About 10 years ago, when I went to Shanghai for the first time, I remember seeing these old jazz bands play, and it was really interesting because there were these old Chinese men playing jazz, but combining it with Chinese instrumentation, and sometimes they would have a female singer who sang in Chinese. And I went home and did a little bit more research and realized the story of these jazz bands was very similar to my own musical journey. My father was actually born in Shanghai, and he left when he was really young. So I grew up here listening to all sorts of Western music, from classical to jazz to pop to hip-hop. But I had a grandfather who would play the flute, and my mom played the zither, and I was exposed to some of those instruments as a kid. And it's really incredible because this project has enabled me to bring things full circle from both a musical and personal perspective. I grew up as a classical pianist and then eventually transitioned to jazz when I was in high school and experimented with all sorts of things throughout high school and college, whether it was choral music or whether it was Broadway or jazz. And I never felt, I guess, completely myself in terms of my musical identity. And it wasn't until one day somebody gave me a suggestion, well, if you want to be true to yourself, why don't you use some of these instruments that you grew up with and grew up listening to? So that's when I started to fuse the Chinese instrumentation with all of the musical experiences I had leading up till that point. The song The Bund is one that's almost in two parts. The beat, when it first starts, is very hip-hop. There's a Chinese instrument on it called the xiaosuona, which is a very shrill instrument, almost flute-like. But in the background, you have a lot of synthesizers. And then later on, the flutes come in. But what I really enjoyed about it is it was almost a New Age song until probably halfway through, where all of a sudden it becomes sort of a piano breakdown, where it's just vocal percussion, which is something used in a lot of college a cappella groups. And on top of it, I was playing jazz piano. And then eventually you actually bring back all the elements from before, the synthesizers, the Chinese flutes, and the hip-hop beat. So at the end, you have almost four genres that are represented. I think when I make this music, the most important thing is to be true to myself and just, I want my music to be a very honest reflection of who I am. And that is a combination of Chinese culture and American culture. And everything I do, even though sometimes it might seem calculated, it's actually very, it's very inspired. And as I was making this music, I found that it would inspire other people. And a lot of people would be very curious as to what those instruments were or where those sounds came from. So it's almost turned into a little bit of a mission to share with people this amazing culture 7,000-8,000 miles away. And then on the flip side, what's interesting is that people in China, when they sometimes hear the music, they'll say it reminds them of their childhood or this region in China. But it's the other elements that they're so curious about. And so it actually can go both ways.
David Liang is the creator of the Shanghai Restoration Project. His two-disc album is called Instrumentals. It's out today. He spoke with independent producer Martina Castro.
Our program is produced by Chip Grabo and edited by Martha Little. The director is Andy Houlihan.
The day-to-day production staff includes Sarah Spivak, Shireen Meraji, Sky Rode, Keemin Sung, Jim Wallace, Steve Prophet, and Ben Phelps Roars.
Our editors are Jason DeRose, Jacob Conrad, and Jolie Myers. Our technical director is Leo Del Aguilar, with engineer Sean Corey Campbell.
The day-to-day theme was composed by Greg Smith. Our executive producer is Deborah Clark. Day to Day is a production of NPR News with contributions from Slate.com. I'm Madeline Brand.
And I'm Alex Chadwick.
James Hunter is a singer and guitarist. He and his band have released a new CD called The Hard Way. Hunter also wrote all the songs on the recording. But when you play the first cut, you would swear you heard it once before, a long time ago.
You had to learn the hard way, what everybody knows. You know I hate to be the one to say I told you so. Yeah, you took the hard way. You took the hard way, the hardest way to go.
Now to me, it sounds like an old Sam Cooke song. And as you listen through to the CD, you can be convinced you're hearing Jackie Wilson or Van Morrison. I don't know much about James Hunter. He's British and was nominated for a Grammy Award for his first record, People Gonna Talk, but that's about all I know. So we've caught up with him in Austin, Texas. He's on tour, and he joins us. Welcome to the program, James.
Thank you, Leanne.
I want to get an idea of how old you are without asking how old you are, so I'm going to ask you another question
All right.
Instead. Were you introduced to soul music and R&B on radio, lacquer, vinyl, tape, disc, or computer file?
Oh, that would date me, wouldn't it? It was an Edison wax cylinder.
Oh, no.
I think. Yes, I borrowed it from my nephew.
And if I believe that, there's a bridge that you want to sell me, right? No, it was...
That's right.
Yeah, but it was 78s, was it not?
It was, yes. They weren't mine. No, they were borrowed permanently from an aged grandparent, and that's what started me off on stuff like this, I think.
What attracted you to the music itself?
I think it was just a bit simpler and more direct, you know, because when I was starting to grow up, I think what was prevalent, at least what my brother was listening to, was what was laughingly called progressive rock. And it's when I decided that my tastes were rather more retrogressive.
I'd love to talk about one of the tunes on the album. And that's...
Sure, yeah.
Don't Do Me No Favors.
You know I fell on hard time, bad luck fell on me. Well, my payday fell on Friday. That's a distant memory. But don't you do me no favor. We're just you let me live and learn.
There's a story behind this, right?
it was an instance of someone lending me money or giving it to me or whatever. And I had mixed feelings about accepting it, and that's why there's a kind of ambiguity about, you know, the sentiments in the song. It's good. It's kind of the resentment at being the recipient of charity and a sort of slight doubt of being worthy of it, you know, that kind of thing. There's another song called Tell Her, which it's advice to someone else how to conduct their love life, and then halfway through the third verse suddenly changes its mind.
Don't be afraid, she'll turn it down. Just take the time to look around, and you'll soon discover that there's other pebbles on the shore.
And says effectively, don't run after a girl or a bus, there'll be another one along in a minute. It might be senility creeping in early, I'm not sure.
Well, senility is not creeping into your voice. You have a beautiful voice, wonderful voice.
Thank you.
When did you or someone else recognize that fact?
Well, I first started attempting it around 1980, you know, and I didn't get too many catcalls, you know, in response to it. But I think it might have been sort of early 20s, people started saying, blimey, you sound like such and such. I only really started liking the sound I was producing by the time I was in my 30s, I think. I'm a very slow developer.
Well, it takes a while for a voice to develop, and sometimes it takes it takes a while for songs to have meaning. I mean, if you were listening to the work of Sam Cooke and Jackie Wilson and people like that, you're writing your own songs, it takes a while for those seeds to be planted and grow.
As writers, you know, there are people like Sam Cooke who certainly had a concept. You know, it's funny that all those artists that we tend to put in the same category are all very different qualities. And, you know, in a literary sense, Sam Cooke was one of the few that really was a writer. And of course, you know, I mean, when I was growing up, I've got different stuff to say from what he has. I have to write from a more general perspective, because I could never have written something like Change Is Gonna Come, you know, because that really is a black man's song. It would have been sound a bit pony for me to try and write something with that exact point of view, you know.
Yeah. You grew up in Colchester, Essex?
Yeah, that's right. So, you know, so there wasn't much of that going on there.
Yeah. But I loved what you said in one interview I read with you. It wasn't quite like growing up in Alabama, but in my part of England, anywhere south of Watford would be considered Alabama.
Exactly, yes, that's right. Yeah, you've got the Mason-Dixon line, we've got the Watford Gap.
You find yourself going back to that rich soil of your youth for inspiration for your songs?
I do go back to Colchester to get me laundry done.
Oh, but come on, do you write about old girlfriends or, you know, things like that?
Well, half the album, isn't it, really?
Really? You know? Is Karina an old girlfriend?
No, she's not that old. Oh, she was, yeah, she was, yeah, she, you know, they're real names, but fictitious stories, you know.
Ah.
I think they're the opposite of what most novelists do, you know, they protect the guilty with pseudonyms. But I do real names, but I just sort of make the whole story up.
Well,
so I'll probably have a few court cases coming up soon.
Well, you're a smart man to put a tune named after a girlfriend and a tune, Jacqueline, named after your wife, on the same CD.
Absolutely, yeah. That'd get me no end of trouble. But, I thought she deserved it. That's the only one that's actually a true story, that one, you know. We've been married for a year and a half now.
Was it a surprise for her? Did you tell her you were doing it?
No, I didn't tell her. She jokingly used to say, well, you keep writing songs about other birds all the time. I wrote it and we recorded it, and I didn't tell her until we released it. You know, I just threw a copy on the table.
Looking back on days gone by before I saw you smile, ain't no one was ever gonna drag me to the aisle. Jacqueline. Wee Jacqueline. Now I can't be still, baby, do you see you will. I remember hoping I could make it on my own.
I had two reasons for sort of keeping it from her. Is one that I thought it'd be a nice surprise, and the other one was that if she heard it and thought it sucked, she wouldn't be able to do anything about it.
What kind of response are you getting here for your music. How's the American tour going?
Well, they seem to be taking it quite well. I haven't had storms of protests of me plagiarizing their music, you know, so yeah, it's been quite favorable.
James Hunter, you have arrived, huh?
Blimey, it looks like it, doesn't it? Yeah.
James Hunter, he joined us from the studios of KUT in Austin, Texas. His new recording on the Hear Music label is called The Hard Way, and he's currently touring the United States with his band. Thanks so much. Good luck to you.
Thank you, Leanne. Never got about the treasure I set out to find.
Later this week, James Hunter plays three shows in Colorado, and then it's off to Minnesota. You can hear a full James Hunter concert at the music section of our website, npr.org. You better know I'm coming.
This is Weekend Edition from NPR News. I'm Leanne Hansen. It's rare these days to turn on your radio and not hear reports on the sputtering economy, rising fuel prices, and people struggling to make ends meet. And it's not just public radio. Even your local country music station is playing the blues. From What's in a Song, our occasional series from the Western Folklife Center, here's one tune about hard times.
My name is Bren Hill. I'm a songwriter from Hooper, Utah. I'm in the X generation. I think this generation is sort of the have it now, pay for it later generation.
I got a brand new custom Rambler with rooms I've never seen, and a matching 10-star bomb that's any cowboy's dream. I got a brand new diesel pickup truck that I can't afford to drive, on the credit card so we can stay alive.
I think we've grown up watching people basically have a lot of prosperity, and the picture is painted that all we really need to do is sign on the dotted line to have that prosperity, when there's a whole lot of work and effort that really should come before that. So that song is about a lot of friends that I have that basically signed on the dotted line and just live on the brink of disaster.
I'm in debt. I'm only 29. My wife every morning, I watch her drive away, and there ain't no time for loving when you got big bills to pay. But she sure looks sexy driving in her luxury sedan.
You talk about going to school, and even really at the university level, I didn't get a whole lot of personal financial advisement from my teachers. Matter of fact, I think more popular on college campuses these days is credit card applications. Get them while we're young, you know.
And my friends, they look at me and they think I'm doing fine. But I take my paycheck, send it on down the line. Cause I'm in debt. Man, I'm only 29. I think a lot of folks are living just like me, waiting for the day they can break free from all this debt.
It's interesting. This song has garnered a lot of varied responses, and I think, to be honest with you, with some folks, it's just too painful. I remember I was playing this song in Southern Arizona at a private function, and a lot of the folks there were obviously fairly well-to-do, buying, you know, expensive art that night, and I played the song. I think they felt bad for me. A guy walked right up out of the audience and stuck a $20 bill in my shirt. I thought, man, I gotta play this song more often, you know?
Honey, grab me that credit card. I'll pay for that later.
That
That's Bren Hill with his song Debt. If you want to hear the whole thing, go to the music section of our website at npr.org. What's in a Song is produced by Hal Cannon and Taki Telenitis of the Western Folklife Center.
Chevy, I'm covered up in dust. Seldom in the driveway.
Our feature, What's in a Song, is produced with support from the George S. and Dolores Dory Eccles Foundation.
You're listening to Weekend Edition from NPR News.